This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
Hello, America. It's Ted from Consumer Cellular, the guy in the orange sweater, and this is your wake-up call. If you don't have Consumer Cellular yet, now is the perfect time to switch and save. For a limited time, new customers can get wireless service for as low as $15 a month for your first year. Yep, the same exact nationwide coverage as the leading carriers for $15 a month for an entire year. What are you waiting for? Call 1-888-FREEDOM or visit ConsumerCellular.com and use code RADIO15.
See ConsumerCellular.com/FirstYear15 for promotional details.
Claire Sanema here, host of Final Days on Earth. Thank you so much for tuning in to my second season on the life and death of Jennifer Harris. I really believe the answers in Jennifer's case are out there, and that one day the Harris family will have justice for Jennifer's death. I believe we can all help get the word out about her case, and I would so appreciate you taking the time to rate, review, and share this podcast wherever you are listening right now. I'm also working on a special Q&A episode and would love to hear your questions about Jennifer's case. So please include them in your review and I'll do my best to answer them in a future episode. Thanks so much for your help. And now for this week's show. After Jennifer Harris's body was found in the Red River and her death was ruled a homicide, neighbors, mediums, and Bonham busybodies came forward and shared information with investigators.
Shortly after her disappearance, Jennifer came crashing into it.
Some of the statements had more value than others.
When she moved back to Bonham, I just asked if she'd seen or heard from Rob at all, and she said, yeah, we talk all the time.
While investigators had been able to retrace some of Jennifer's last steps, her actual murder was still shrouded in mystery.
I don't ever want Jennifer to be forgotten. She hasn't had closure, and her case is not solved. And the family has had no justice. And for someone to put on a podcast or put in a newspaper or put anywhere is important to our family.
Join me as we try to discover, what happened to Jennifer Harris, and who is responsible for her death? From Cold Case Productions, this is Final Days on Earth, Season 2, The Life and Death of Jennifer Harris, Episode 9, Eyewitnesses, Part 2. I'm your host, Claire Sanema. Thanks for listening. Though investigators had continued working the Jennifer Harris murder case for nearly a year, they still hadn't gotten much more in the way of leads. They kept true to their original two persons of interest, Jennifer's ex-boyfriend, James Hamilton, and her ex-husband, Rob Holman. But proving that either man was involved in Jennifer's death with the evidence and witness statements they had was shaky. Local investigators were reaching out to everyone they could for help on the case, including law enforcement across the state line in Oklahoma. About a month after discovering Jennifer's body, a woman who had been camping on the Oklahoma side of the Red River Bank came forward with information. A report from the Bryan County Sheriff's Office stated that Tina O'Daniel told investigators that around 8 p.m. on Thursday, May 16, 2002, 2 days before Jennifer's body was discovered, she'd witnessed an altercation on the bridge. According to the report, Tina said she overheard a man and woman arguing on top of the bridge. She heard the woman pleading, "Don't do this!" And then there was a splash in the water, followed by what she believed to be a body floating down the river. Tina said she then saw the man speed off in a white, double-cab pickup truck. Alarmed, Tina went down to the Red River to look for the woman's body, but did not see anyone in the water anymore. Though the date differed from when Jennifer originally went missing, witness memory can sometimes be off by a day or two, so it was still a promising lead, and Fannin County investigators went to work tracking it down. They talked to Tina and visited the location where she said she saw a woman being pushed off the bridge. This particular bridge, however, was not the Highway 78 bridge in Bonham. It was actually the Highway 89 bridge in Carter County, Oklahoma. Jennifer's case file notes that Mike Overton, an investigator with the Bryan County Sheriff's Office, confirmed that this particular point on the Red River is over 100 miles away from where Jennifer's body was found, making it an impossible distance for her remains to have traveled in just 2 days. Whoever Tina saw arguing on the Highway 89 bridge, it most certainly wasn't Jennifer Harris and her killer. The identity of the body Tina says she saw floating in the Red River on May 16, 2002, remains unknown. On the one-year anniversary of Jennifer's death, the town of Bonham was still on edge about the horrific murder of one of their own. The local media ran a story about the unsolved case, and it caught someone's attention.
We seen her picture on TV.
Okay.
Me and my mom both said, there she is.
This is Deborah Lambert, a resident of Ardmore, Oklahoma. She called up the Fannin County Sheriff's Office in May 2003 and asked to speak to someone about the Jennifer Harris case. The audio can be a bit rough, but using a transcript and watching the video of Deborah's statement has aided our reporting. Deborah told Chief Deputy Donnie Foster a detailed story from Sunday, May 12, 2002. Deborah said she'd been driving from East Texas to Oklahoma with her mom on Mother's Day, and that she remembered seeing an unexpected and disturbing scene on the Red River Bridge at Highway 78.
It's the Red River.
Okay.
And it was on Highway 78.
Okay. 78 coming out of Bonham.
Coming from Bonham.
Okay.
Police pressed Deborah about the specifics of the location, asking for landmarks.
Any landmarks that helps you recall that?
The Red River Fishing Hole.
It appeared to be the very same bridge where fisherman Eugene Dollar had directed authorities to Jennifer's body 1 year earlier. Police continued their conversation with Deborah and honed in on what had caught her attention after she crossed the bridge into Oklahoma.
I understand that when you cross the bridge and got onto the Oklahoma side, you saw something that caught you and your mother's attention. Can you recall or tell me what you recall seeing that day when you were crossing the bridge?
We were driving across the bridge, and to the left-hand side of the bridge, we saw a dark truck and a red truck. Two pickups were there. There was three guys out there and a girl.
Okay.
And two guys had the girl by her elbows, and it was like she was trying to get away from them, and they were restraining her.
Deborah was describing a disturbing scene, with three men restraining a girl by her elbows on the Red River Bridge. Police asked Deborah what she remembered about the mystery woman's appearance, and if there was anything distinctive about her. Deborah remembered the woman's hair.
Was there anything else that was distinctive about her? Complexion, anything that would have been
visible? Her hair.
Her hair. What about her hair was distinctive to you?
Like it was permed, you know.
Okay. Red. Do you remember the color? I'm sorry,
like
red?
It's a reddish brown.
This is consistent with Jennifer's hair, which was curly and dark red. Deborah told investigators she thought the woman appeared to be struggling and had a scared, terrified look on her face.
So you think she was struggling, for lack of better words?
To me, yes.
Okay.
And it's like she looked up and I made eye contact with her. And it was, she was scared, terrified look on her face.
Deborah told investigators that she and her mom were alarmed, and that her mom said, "That girl's fixin' to get raped and killed."
Me and my mom were in the car, and my mom seen her too, and she said, "That girl's fixin' to get raped and killed. She has no business being out there with three men by herself." And it was about 3 or 4 days later, after us being home, that we seen her picture on TV.
Okay. Now, when you saw that picture, what did your memory recall, if anything?
Me and my mom both said, "There she is."
Okay. Not a doubt in your mind.
No.
That the picture you saw on TV of the girl was the same girl you saw the day that you and your mother crossed the bridge returning home.
Right.
Okay.
In case you didn't catch that, Deborah said she and her mom immediately recognized the image of Jennifer Harris they saw in the news report as the woman with red hair they'd seen struggling on the bridge with multiple men on Mother's Day in 2002. But amazingly, even though Deborah didn't have a doubt in her mind that she'd witnessed Jennifer Harris being accosted on the Red River Bridge, she didn't call police back in 2002.
Is there a reason why you didn't call the police? Or?
Well, one, we were afraid to, because there's three guys to just me and my mom. And you never know these days if people got a gun or a key or whatever, so we didn't stop.
Deborah said when she saw a news report back in 2002 stating that a body had been found in the Red River, she assumed that the case would be solved quickly, without her help.
I was scared to put my nose in where it didn't belong.
But when the first anniversary of Jennifer's death came around and the case still wasn't solved, it was finally enough for Deborah to speak up. Seeing Jennifer's picture once again on the local news was all it took. Deborah said she put herself in the Harris family's shoes, imagining it was her kid out there and somebody had information.
It was just a picture of her, and they said that the family was trying to get closure. They wanted to find out who did it. And I got to thinking, well, if that was my kid out there, you know, I would, and somebody had information, I would want somebody to say something. So that's why I went ahead and said something.
It'd been a year, but Deborah's memory of May 12th, 2002 appeared to be solid. She was able to recount her route to authorities, detailing the town she crossed through from East Texas to Oklahoma, including an extended stop in Bonham, before going over the Red River Bridge. Deborah described the woman in distress as having long, permed red hair, and she said she matched Jennifer's picture from her missing person flyer to a T.
In reviewing that poster, is that the same girl you saw the day you crossed the bridge and on the newscast?
Yes.
If you were to say 0 to 100%, sure.
100% sure.
Deborah said based on a photograph of Jennifer, she was 100% sure it was the same person she'd seen on the bridge. But when asked about the time of day Deborah believed she'd crossed the bridge and witnessed a woman struggling with multiple men, her story started to deviate from the established details of Jennifer's case.
Do you have an idea of maybe what time you think you crossed the bridge?
I'd say between 4:30 and 5.
Okay. Still,
maybe.
Sun was still up, still
sun
light.
Sun was still up, it's still
okay.
If it really was 4:30 or 5 p.m. when Deborah and her mom crossed the Red River Bridge on May 12th, then it's highly unlikely that the person she saw was Jennifer Harris. But what are the odds that another red-haired woman was being accosted on the Red River Bridge on Mother's Day 2002? Or could it be that a year later, Deborah just got the time wrong?
You told me that it had been about a year ago, but that could vary maybe an hour one way or the other.
Right.
Is that still the best of your memory, and it still could vary like that?
Yeah, give or take.
According to weather records, on May 12, 2002, in Fannin County, the sun set at 8:16 p.m. In Deborah's statement to police, she was really only clear on one aspect of the time, that it was still light outside. That description leaves room for it to be around 8 p.m. when Deborah saw that distressing scene on the Red River Bridge. Despite the time discrepancy, police were still very interested in what Deborah had to say, and they wanted more information about the two trucks that Deborah remembered seeing.
And again, just to make sure, the two vehicles you saw was a red pickup and either a black or dark blue pickup.
Right.
Do you recall if they were Fords, Chevrolets?
I don't know. If I was guessing, I would say they were Chevy.
At the time of Jennifer's disappearance, James Hamilton and Rob Holman were driving dark-colored pickup trucks. Both were American-made, but neither one were Chevys. James drove a blue Dodge Dakota, King Cab, and Rob had a black Ford half-ton truck with an extended cab. Unfortunately, Deborah didn't remember any details about the license plates of the trucks, but she did think she got a good look at the people involved. She talked about one guy being skinnier than the rest, with a red hat on.
You said you could remember what the three males were wearing.
The best you can remember,
the fact that it's been a year. Let's start with the guy that had his back to you. Number one, size-wise, was he larger or smaller than the other two, and what do you recall him wearing?
He was small, the skinnier than the rest of them. He had on a red hat, and I know he was wearing a red hat. He had on jeans.
The other two men Deborah believed she saw were closer in size. One was wearing dark shorts, and the other was in jeans and a white t-shirt. Deborah said she didn't remember anything about the woman's clothing because she was so focused on the scared look in her eyes.
When I seen her, all I focused on was her eyes. And if you could see her eyes, you could tell that she was scared, and I should have said something then and didn't.
Claire Sanima here, host of Final Days on Earth. Let's talk about your best defense for the unexpected. Are you prepared if the unthinkable happens? If a medical emergency arises, Air Medcare Network provides members with world-class emergency air transport services to the nearest hospital with no out-of-pocket expenses. Join today and never pay a dime for your medical flight when flown by an AMCN provider. Insurance doesn't always cover the full cost of a medical emergency, so this is a great way to secure financial peace of mind. Memberships cost as little as $85 a year for your entire household. And right now, as a listener of my show, you'll get up to a $50 Visa or Amazon gift card with a new membership. Visit airmedcarenetwork.com/final and use offer code FINAL. No matter where you're at the game of life, an Air Medcare Network membership is the protection no one should live without. Police wanted to see if they could match up Deborah's memory with any of the persons of interest in Jennifer's case. So they showed her a lineup of six male photographs and asked her if she could positively identify any of them as the men she'd seen on the bridge that day. Authorities had already shown Deborah this lineup once when they spoke with her in Oklahoma. Now, back in Texas, they showed it to her for a second time.
In these six photos, there are no names, addresses of any of the persons that are appearing on the photos to give you identifications of who they are. They were numbered 1 through 6. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. What I would like to do, Ms. Lambert, is hand you that lineup again. And I'll ask you to do the same thing for me today.
As part of the standard pre-lineup protocol, police asked Deborah if there was anyone pictured in the lineup that she knew previously or had any connection to. They did this because if Deborah did have a prior relationship or association with anyone in the lineup, it could skew her identification. Deborah said she did not.
Okay. I will ask you again, if you would please, ma'am, to please review that photo lineup. Please take your time in doing so. If there's anyone you're positive about, please let me know that. If you're not positive, please just tell me that. And again, those are numbered, and when you do make the decision, whether it be positive or negative, just let me know the number that you have chosen.
There's a 15-second pause before Deborah answers the deputy's question.
I'm positive about number three.
You are positive about number three. Mm-hmm. And would that person that you're positive about, would he have been one of those persons that was holding her by the arms or the one that was by the pickup?
The one holding her by the arms.
In case you didn't catch that, Deborah says she's positive about number three, and that she believed that was the man she saw holding a woman by her arms on the bridge. Deborah has already pulled one photo from the lineup, but authorities don't stop there. They ask her if anyone else pictured was out at the Red River Bridge on May 12, 2002.
Are there any other persons in that lineup that you recall from that day? And if there's not, just because there's three males that you recall seeing, doesn't mean that any of those males or all three could be in that lineup. If you only recall number three, that's certainly fine. If there's additional persons in that lineup that you recall, please let me know. And if there's not, that's fine also. Just the only thing I want to insist, for lack of better words, is that you be positive, because we certainly want to be positive in our investigation on this case, and all I'm asking of you is to be positive. If there's no one else in there, then simply let me know that.
There's another 20-second pause while Deborah pours over the lineup. Then she gives an answer.
Think number six could have been? Are you positive?
Deborah tells the investigator it could be him, but in the picture, he, quote, looks fatter.
The picture looks fatter.
Looks fatter?
Yeah. And I'm not sure. I don't know how to judge size.
While noting that she's not as positive about number six as she is about number three, police ask Deborah to physically point to the first photograph she has indicated by number as part of the official record process.
Again, if you would indicate by pointing to the one that you're positive about with your finger, please.
Yes, sir.
Okay, and that is number three for purposes of our record,
yes.
And that is in the top right-hand corner. Is mm-hmm. that correct? Okay.
They had Deborah do the same thing with the second photo she selected from the lineup. Again, she reiterated that the photo appeared to be fatter than the person she believed she saw on the Red River Bridge.
Okay. Well, I guess for lack of better words on my part, then, would you be able to tell me and or a court that positively number six is a person you saw?
Yeah. But I don't judge weight. His picture makes him look fatter.
Police ask Deborah to assign a percentage of certainty on her identifications. She landed on 80% sure for number six and 100% sure for number three.
I can't say 100%. I'd be saying I'm 80% sure.
On number six?
Yeah, so
what percent would you say you are on number three?
100%.
In the video of Deborah's interview, the actual names of the people that Deborah selected from the lineup of photos are not identified. And their names do not appear anywhere in the transcript. So who are these mystery men? As I went back through the case file, I was drawn to a report from the Texas Rangers Unsolved Crimes Investigation Team. The Texas Rangers are an elite branch of the Texas State Police, who are tasked with investigating the toughest crimes in the Lone Star State. The Fannin County District Attorney and Fannin County Sheriff's Office requested the Rangers' assistance in January 2004, and the Jennifer Harris case was assigned to Texas Ranger Sergeant Creighton McGee for evaluation. Among the many things that Ranger McGee did in the Harris case was to re-interview Deborah Lambert. According to McGee's report, Deborah's descriptions were consistent with her previous statements. McGee then gave Deborah a new photo lineup to review. In his report, Ranger McGee states that Deborah positively identified one image. And unlike the other law enforcement entities in this case, the ranger actually provided a name. The report states, Lambert identified Robert Holman as one of the men she observed at the Red River Bridge on May 12, 2002. Ranger McGee's report also states that the descriptions of the vehicles that Deborah provided are consistent with Rob Holman's truck, which was black, and the truck driven by one of his close friends, which was red. I'm purposely holding back the name of this friend because, unlike Rob Holman and James Hamilton, this person has never been identified as a person of interest in the case.
I do want to ask one other question. In revealing this information to us, how does this make you feel? Are you nervous about it? Are you scared about it?
Scared and nervous.
Okay. What fears do you have from revealing this information to law enforcement officials?
That if I'm right and they find out, they're going to come kill me.
On the next episode of Final Days on Earth, the life and death of Jennifer Harris.
So, there's something we've been waiting to talk about for a long time. In this case, and that is the fire. Tell me when you learned that fire might have played a role in Jennifer's case.
It could just be a coincidence, but in my line of work, there are no coincidences.
Investigator Daryl Parker digs into a mysterious fire that burned on the shores of the Red River the very same night that Jennifer Harris disappeared.
So sometime between 8:12 and midnight.
That fire burned.
Yes. And when the fire department got there, the cabin was already fully engulfed.
Could Jennifer's cold case finally be heating up?
Why would a cabin spontaneously combust? It did not. The fire department determined that it was arson. So somebody intentionally set it on fire.
If you have any information about the unsolved murder of Jennifer Harris, contact the Fannin County Sheriff's Department at 903-583-2143. Final Days on Earth is recorded in Dallas, Texas for Cold Case Productions in partnership with Podcast One. This episode was written and reported by me, Claire Sanimal, and Hillary Wadsworth. Audio production by Matthew Malinger of Podcast One. Original theme music composed and performed by Riley Simmons. Associate producer is April Scales. Field producer is Molly McEwen. Editorial consultant is Lucy Scott of LucyMedia.com. Executive producers are Sharon Richards and me, Claire Sanimal. Special thanks to Alyssa Harris-Warnick, Daryl Parker, and Fannin County Sheriff Mark Johnson for talking to me in this episode. If you enjoy listening to Final Days on Earth, please rate and review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Good Pods, and anywhere else you listen to this podcast. Thank you so much for your support.